To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men.
Welcome, everybody. This is a Room Tone, the radio show. We talk movies because we love it. And here we are broadcasting from unceded Musqueam land on 101.9 FM. And today we have the honor to be joined by two incredible, super sparkling, creative producers. Everybody, raise your hands for Mayumi Yoshida and Nech Dutsdimeda. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Hi.
Oh, what an intro. Awesome.
What an intro.
There we go. Mayumi and Nech, it's a pleasure to have you guys over here. And I can't wait to get to talk with you guys a little bit about the whole flow of independent filmmaking right now here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And why not start with a cross introduction? Why not each other? You introduce each other with that. How does that feel?
Do you want to go first?
You can go first.
Oh my God. Okay.
Let's go for it.
This is Nech Dutsdimeda, and he is a producer, writer, director in town, and he's part of This Is Spoon Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Mayumi Yoshida. She's an actor, writer, director, probably most well known for her role as the Crown Princess in Amazon's The Man in High Castle. And I guess for the purpose of this podcast, this radio show, we're both co-producers of MAM this year, which is the Mighty Asian Movie Making Marathon, kind of like a filmmaking challenge by VAF.
Awesome. Why don't we talk? Why don't we kick things off with that? With MAM 13. You know, I'm very curious to hear because you know it's been around for a while, but this year it really took on a different vibe, and you know, it became very, very strong, and people got to know about it so quickly. So I'd love to know more. What was your position on it, and how did it all evolve?
We jumped on. We were there last year. Actually, we were actually participants of MAM last year, and afterwards, we had a meeting with Grace Chin, who was at the time the festival director, and we talked about how we wanted to get involved with MAM and how we wanted to like include more of our like local filmmakers that we know. And then it kind of evolved again. We had meetings with VAF team, with Lynn and Regina and Vincent. And then they were so welcoming for our idea of like being the creative producers of this year. So we started off with the panels, which you were there as well. Mm-hmm. And it was a diversity panel. And then that led to the Mighty Asian Movie Making Marathon Movie Making Contest, mm-hmm. which the movie making part ended last week. And the screening is happening in September on September 9th.
Awesome. So September 9th, everybody, just keep the date free. And actually, we'd love to know more about the details of that screening and even of the overall adventure, because I know you guys have created an actual competition and people basically competed to have the chance to participate to this. How was the whole process, Nech?
It's fun. I mean, the goal for us this year was to make MAM bigger and better, you know, to bring more of a community aspect, to bring people from all skill levels together. So the premise of MAM is you get to make a film in 10 days. So you can write it, but you have to actually go to camera and edit and deliver your film in those 10 days. And we have two categories. There's one category for 10-minute short films, and there's one category for the ultra-short 1-minute short films. So filmmakers from all around the Lower Mainland came together and pitched their ideas and in a video pitch and told us what their scripts were, what their ideas were, why they wanted to make it. And we had a jury who selected the top 8 projects from those pitches.
We had the biggest submissions this year, which is, you know, we were so lucky to get a lot of people interested. But I think part of us, we're also young filmmakers here in town as indie filmmakers, and we know that our community is very strong and the talent here is like, it's really getting stronger every year. So we wanted to find a platform for those filmmakers to gather together and make films together and then screen all together as well. And also add the factor that we want to cultivate Asian filmmakers. And that's part of that's what VAF's mandate was as well. So we're like, okay, let's do this. Let's do this together.
Mm-hmm. That sounds beautiful. That sounds lovely. But I'd love to know a little bit more about your life as well and your career and what brought you to become creative producers of MAM 13. Who's gonna go first? Who's gonna go first?
Well, I've always been a producer type. I guess it's I love film. I love writing. I love directing. But I think it's the logical side of my brain that, you know, grounds me, and I think that's why I'm a good producer, I guess. Like, it comes naturally to me, like, the skill set that I have. And, you know, I'm also passionate about representation, diversity in film, and, you know, making sure that we also see a reflection of ourselves, our community on the screen, especially in this city, a city that's so diverse. And when this opportunity came up that, you know, to improve MAM, to improve the event for Vancouver Asian Film Festival, I thought it'd be great, especially with Mayumi, who's also, you know, very passionate about that.
Awesome. I'd love to ask you something, Ash, before we fade into Mayumi. And I'd like to ask you, actually, what do you think makes a good producer?
There's so many factors that go into it, I guess. But, you know, one for sure is... a good understanding of story at a ground level, you know, understanding film as a medium, and also on the kind of, I guess, more, you know, logistical side, being able to communicate, being able to get a team together, making sure that they're able to work well and oversee everything from prep to post and make sure that it's the best it can be and everyone's happy.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like there's a lot of emotional intelligence going on right there, you know? That's yeah, there you go. All right, interesting. And Mayumi, how about you?
I actually started off as an actor. So Akashi was my filmmaker debut, I guess. And I was lucky that, well, the first that project was all Asian cast and majority was Japanese, and that's how I met Phil Planta, because I wanted an Asian producer. And he had a huge community behind him. And he's been doing MAM for a long time. And I think after I made it, I took Akashi to lots of Asian film festivals and then realized there's an even bigger community outside of Vancouver. And then I realized how, like, actually we can make Vancouver Asian community better. We can gather so many of us who I know already who weren't actually involved in VAF or MAM. And by getting all of us together, we can just elevate this competition. Mm-hmm. So that's what really... And also, you know, some of us, I think, still feels like in the not non-indie filmmaking world, it's still a fight for representation. So in the indie world, we still have control. We have the possibility of changing that. So it kind of came naturally that, well, why not? We are not going to just complain and wait for it. We might as well stand up and just do it.
Yes, I like that. I like that. And that's a big scream, you know, screaming for independence. And it's actual creative independence, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what really, really makes an artist in the end. And the beautiful aspect of filmmaking is that we all come together and we need a team. What do you think makes a good team?
I've realized that in directing and producing, pretty much 90% of it, of the actual film to be good, is if you have a good team, good cast behind it. Mm-hmm. So the very first initial point of picking your crew and picking your cast, you need to really take time and make sure you communicate with them then. That's when I think you make the foundation of the film. And then on the film set, you all know each other, or like you trust each other, and then the work will build on top of that, I think. So we've had a really great experience with our film so far, where we've just found those people and who've wanted to come back on set with us and work with us. And then it just kind of, the work spoke for itself. Like our chemistry on set, it translates on the screen, and I think that's with a lot of other films too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think communication is a big part of it. Like, that's, you know, that's how you get anywhere. That's how you create. That's how you get inspired. It's just by talking to people, finding people who are like-minded and collaborating on an idea that you both or you all can jive with, that you all can, you know, see. You can imagine the big picture and then you make it together.
And how do you transition that process? You know, you have to pick the idea. Or maybe the idea picks you to be expressed, to be shared. How is that process for you guys? How do you guys get inspired?
You mean like what kind of stories do you get inspired by?
Yeah, I'm just very curious to know how you get that idea, that thunder, that inspiration. Is it something you build across time, or it's an idea that hits you right away?
I always trust my gut. Whenever I read a script and it doesn't shake me in my gut, then it's like, oh, it's not for me.
Okay.
Or, you know, it's for someone else. It's not my film. Mm-hmm. I've gotten like lots of offers on, like, I've been sent scripts or asked to direct things, and most times when I turn it down, I know that I'm not the best person to direct this, or there's someone who wants to do it and sort of scared to do it, so they would rather have someone else do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel that, so I would just kind of push them, no, you can do it, you should do it, because you're totally able to do it. And if it is something that I know that I'm probably the best person to do it, then I'll totally just take it. But it really, for me, it comes from my gut.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that, Natch?
Yeah, no, gut's definitely a big part of it. Like, for me, it's always been, if I love it, then I'll commit my time to it, because that's the biggest thing, especially for a producer, or director, or writer on an indie level, when, you know, most of the time you're not really getting... you know, you're not getting paid. You're not, you know, you're doing many thankless jobs and for the love of the project. And especially when you're producing it, it's like, okay, there's the prep period, there's the shooting period, but the film also stays with you for years to come. Like, you're going to be promoting it. You're going to live and breathe it for years to come, right? So I think the biggest part for me is that understanding that, it's like, I really have to love the project going in to really be able to commit and, like, live with that film for, you know, the next little while. So that's for me, is the biggest thing.
Beautiful. And that raises another big question. I'm very curious to know about your artistic background, because I know that filmmaking is embedded, you know, with so many different crafts and so many different art forms. And I'm curious if there is a specific art form that led you into filmmaking.
I started off as an actor, and I actually I started off doing theater, a lot of theater in Japan, back in Tokyo. And then I transitioned to film and TV, but majority of my career has been based on acting, and I still do it. And I think I'm able to do directing and writing from an actor's perspective, and I also feel like there's a lot of people ask me, like, well, do you feel like, do you have to switch your mind? And, like, do you have to wear, I know you're wearing different hats, but what is it like? And I'm like, actually, it's not, because at the end of the day, it's all storytelling. So it's not a huge shift for me. It is, I guess, kind of, I'm more mindful as a director, like, of the big picture. But it's all about what best serves the story, what best serves the product.
It sounds like there is a core of gravity, which is basically colored by the sense of story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pivot around that sense of story as an actor and director.
Definitely.
That sounds to me. And I know that you guys are actually coming out of a co-directing experience. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How is co-directing?
It's great. I think we complement each other in the best ways. I mean, we've done two projects now. We've co-directed. One was called Tokyo Lovers, which we did in Tokyo. It was a very small guerrilla project that we both kind of co-wrote, co-directed, and she acted in. It was kind of like a workcation. Like, we were there for a vacation, but, you know, we were like, hey, we've got some friends coming over. One of them's an actor. We got a, you know, a couple of friends with a camera, so let's shoot something. And that became kind of like our first project. We were testing the waters almost, and it worked out really well, I think. And we just finished off a second short film called The Day We Met. It was made as part of this edition of Story Hive Digital Shorts, and it was someone else's script. It was our friend Lee Shorten's script, but I think we both had a similar reaction reading it, and a similar treatment. So I think we went forward with co-directing that as well. And again, that was probably one of my best film experiences thus far.
Oh, wow. How so? Is that the team? Is that the collaboration? Is that the story?
It was everything. I have to give like huge kudos to our writer, Lee Shorten. It was his first time, and he's been our actor friend for like a while. But this was his first time writing. And he took our notes like so well, to the extent that like we were very nitpicky, and we workshopped many times, and we would stop and think, and you know, I don't like, we did over 10, 12 revisions for sure, easy. And because we all care about the story and we really wanted to be, for it to be the best, we wanted to try every direction, and he was always so patient with us. And that was the same with all the crew. They were all there to just, and they were all so professional. And and our three producers, Sandeep, Phil, and Theo, they really made the production go really smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And if you have those people, and they were so trusting of us, so they would let us do our artistic work, and they would kind of handle all the logistics to make sure that we can run around and do all the things.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was really a dream team.
That's awesome right there. Well, these dream teams, it's what inspires us to do the next project, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? I'm going to ask you if you have some other big next projects in mind. But before going there, we actually have to take a little break. We're going to take a break. And for today's episode, the guest chose soundtrack by Philip Glass. And I'd love to ask you why you chose Philip Glass specifically a little later. But for now, this is the soundtrack of the movie Kundun, of course, composed by Philip Glass. And the name of the song is Retting's Eyes. So everybody enjoy. I'll catch you after the break. Wow. Woo! That was incredible, huh? That was Philip Glass, Retting's Eyes, from the movie Kundun by Martin Scorsese. And I want to ask you guys, how come you chose Philip Glass?
I've always had a very soft spot for Philip Glass. I mean, Mayumi and I think listen to music for similar reasons. And for me, it's, you know, to get inspired. You know, we listen to music when we write, when we talk and stuff like that. And for me, Philip Glass has been a personal favorite just because, you know, he's a minimalist artist, minimalist kind of, I guess, contemporary classical artist. And it's a lot of repetition, a lot of, like, if you listen to Glass's pieces, it's a lot of the same motif being built on. Like, he builds on the same chords over and over and over again. But the way that he does that, the way that the song progresses on that same theme, that same motif, and the way the chords, like, change slowly, they have a very, I guess, distinct effect on how you perceive the piece of music. So to me, it's like storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mayumi, how do you feel about that?
the best thing working with Natch co-directing is we both appreciate music so much in film. So we always make sure we have like a draft of like, this is the soundscape we want. And then this is the sort of the music we want for the composer to make. And I think for the past two films that we'd worked together, we have a very strong score. The first one, The Tokyo Lovers, we had Sean Williams. And then second one with The Day We Met, we got Samuel Kim. And I think music just elevates. So any music that sort of just takes story to another level, we have so much respect and appreciate. And Philip Glass is definitely one of those composers who does that.
Mm-hmm. That's tasty right there. All right. yeah. Music. Woo. You know, it's impossible to talk about music unless you dedicate a big chunk of time
totally.
There, you know? When
yeah.
you get in there, you just get lost. And there are so many aspects to it, so many layers. Mm-hmm. And when you think about movies, you know, music is already so complete. Then you mm-hmm. put images and everything that can be delivered and conveyed visually. Woo!
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a huge effect. What yeah. do you mm-hmm. think is a movie that manages to do that well and pair music and visuals in the most effective way?
One of my favorite films is Cinema Paradiso.
Oh, Cinema Paradiso, of course. Oh, yeah, give me a hand right there.
Oh, yeah.
Are you kidding
yeah.
me? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that, when I saw that movie, I think I was like 14 or 15. I could not believe how much emotions went through in that final scene. I won't ruin it for the people who mm-hmm. I have not seen it. But that final scene shook me so hard. I was sobbing. And even after the music ended, I could just keep hearing the music playing in my head. And then whenever I remember that moment, the music comes in instantly. And whenever I hear the music by itself, I see and feel the movie right in front of me. And mm-hmm. I think that's such a powerful movie that really combined music and picture mm-hmm. beautifully.
Mm-hmm. I resonate a lot with what you're saying. I remember watching the movie around the age that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And there is just something about the experience of the kid, you know, and the aspect of growth. And the music functions as a bridge, you
mm-hmm.
know. It's actually, there is something interesting. James Hillman said that there are three things that they all begin with M that connect the visible with the invisible. And those are myths, stories, mathematics, and music. And I feel that music is that bridge that really takes us back to the environment of the movie. Mm-hmm. Natch, is there a specific movie you have in mind?
I don't really have a stand-up movie in mind, but I guess now that you're playing Philip Glass, it reminds me of this film that I guess uses Glass really well, and that was a documentary, actually, Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Mm.
I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about this sushi
so
chef in Japan who's dedicated his whole life to the art of just making sushi. And I remember hearing the soundtrack, the score to that film, and it was Philip Glass, and it was just like this repetitiveness, like really beautiful repetitiveness of this music that I guess fits so well thematically with the theme, you know, of like he's every single day of his life, it's about just making the perfect piece of sushi mm-hmm. and like really passing on that legacy to his family. And that was, you know, the thematic. And I think the music does such a great job at elevating that to like a whole new level, and you're really able to understand that idea because of the music.
Mm-hmm. The pattern of practice, eh?
Yeah, and we just went to see Coda.
Okay.
It's a documentary of Yuichi Sakamoto, the composer from mm-hmm. Japan. And it's his process of how he made, we can see his process of how he composed the music for The Revenant and his search for the great soundscape and that specific sound, or just searching for a sound that he doesn't even know, was like, it was so inspiring. It is a very, it's an unknown artistic journey that they keep going with so much, I don't know, they're just so brave to go into that world without even knowing what's going to come out. And that was a really inspiring movie to watch too, because, it's hard to articulate. What do you think?
I guess getting a glimpse of the artistic process behind the music. Like I think for a lot of us, when you listen to a song or an album, like you always take it at face value. You don't really know the work that goes behind. I guess same with making movies. You don't really know the work that goes behind the piece, and being able to see the creative process is, you know, you really look at something in a whole new light, and you're able to gain that appreciation.
What did he say? He said, "I'm fishing water," or something. He's like in the North Pole.
That's a really good
sitting,
quote.
And then he's like, he has this sound, a mic attached to the...
like a fishing rod. And
yeah,
he was just
and
like submerging the mic underwater.
Yeah, and then he's just sitting there with like giant jackets. And he's just like sitting there. And then he just says to the camera, I'm fishing sound.
That's so awesome right there. Awesome. Very interesting. There are so many composers out there that do a great job.
Yeah.
Really, really grateful to all composers out there. Have you guys played any instruments?
I used to, for a second, played the cello.
Oh!
It was so fun. But one of the main reasons was, one, I could skip class in school to go to a cello class. And then the second reason was my teacher looked like Mel Gibson at that time. So I was like, yeah, I would like to take this class.
Okay, there you go. Natch.
And yeah, I played the piano for a bit. I actually Ooh. Was in like for a brief period of time. I was in a band and I was like playing synth. So that was like that's a really fun.
Wow, what genre? What genre was it? Yeah, give me that. Give me
it
that.
It was like electronic, like dream pop. It was very like wavy and yeah. Oh man. And then I was also in a touring choir for a few years. So
nice.
It was you know, I was a bass.
Yeah. I can hear that for sure. Mm, amazing.
Yeah, that was fun.
Wow. Okay, there is a lot of music. You see, they're tinted by so many different colors here. Huh? Mm-hmm. Really reaching all over the color wheel. I feel every filmmaker or whoever works in film somehow should touch every art form in a way to be able to understand a little better the whole flow. It's so complete, right? Every time you're on set, there's so many crazy things happening on set. So many different interactions and dynamics. Mm-hmm. What was the most iconic moment on set that you remember?
That's crazy.
Whatever, something that really brings you back there with a smile, you know. Nat, you got something right there?
I guess I can briefly tell you the story about Cypher, which is a film that I co-wrote and co-produced last year as part of Crazy AIDS. And it was probably, at the time, I thought it was like the most stressful thing to ever happen to me. Like, it was such a big production, one that I'm not used to. It was like, you know, on our biggest day, we were shooting at a school, and there was like, 60, 70, 80 people there at one point, like all there just to do this scene. And it was chaos everywhere. And you know, it was part of Crazy, so we had to shoot and deliver, you know, edit and deliver the film in 8 days. So we were already put under a lot of time pressure and stress. And on our second day of shooting, we, you know, long story short, we lost the location, and everyone was like, "Oh my God, this is over." Looking back at it now, it's like the ability for everyone to just gather themselves, like really come together as a team and figure out a solution. That was probably, like, now that I look back at it, it's like, that was such a great moment just to see, you know, everyone being there for the love of the project and really troubleshooting and problem solving to just get the movie done. And,
wow, how did you guys fix that?
You know, we were at a school, and once we couldn't be in the school anymore, we actually went back to the production office. We, like, hauled lockers and, like, you know, desk and stuff, and just, like, tried to recreate that school environment. There was this whole, like, fight scene that we had to do that we hadn't, you know, couldn't capture. And it was a huge, you know, like, everyone go now. And then, yeah, but
it worked out.
Yeah, like, we did it, and it looks great. And we were so glad that, you know, people didn't give up. You know, I was just so impressed by, you know, all the cast and crew for just pulling together. And now that I look back at it, that's probably like the, you know, one of my best film experience. Again, like one of my best experiences, just because I was able to feel like, you know, like I was part of that force that really came together.
Mm-hmm, that's amazing.
I think another one might be when we were shooting Tokyo Lovers in Japan. We have one scene at the countdown at Shibuya, the Shibuya crossing. So we were actually there for the countdown, December 31st, 2017. And we were in the pool of like 10,000 people.
Probably more.
More. A lot of people. A lot of people. So we had to shoot this, and we only had one chance, and we only have like 3 crew. So that was insane. But it was also really fun, and we kind of, you know, all understood after that, okay, well, we're never going to do that again, but that, you know, it's in film, and it's gorgeous, and I'm glad that we kind of just experienced that together.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And by the way, I wanted to congratulate with you guys because Cypher is such a great movie.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, I want to give a shout out to Crazy 8s as well, because Crazy 8s does an incredible amount of work for the independent community of filmmakers here in Vancouver. And that being said, I know you guys have also experience with the Story Hive, another organization around here. How was your experience with Story Hive?
They're so awesome.
Nothing short of amazing.
I'm not sponsored by them, but I really want to like, I just want to, but they have, they've basically made my career. Or if they didn't hold the Female Directors Edition Story Hive for digital shorts, I would not have stepped up to direct or write my own short film and call myself a director and a filmmaker. And now I'm more comfortable. And or I wouldn't have been able to meet this community or like have this community right now if I had not put myself out there for Story Hive. So I really appreciate that they're every edition that they have, they make it specific. So I think it brings out a lot more new filmmakers. And we go to the States for film festivals often, and every time we go there, the people in the States are like, what? You get $10,000 to make a film? And we're so spoiled, kind of, that we're, you know, because if you do have $10,000, you kind of like budget and things, and then you realize that, sorry.
No, it's so good.
It's not quite enough. But once you, when you talk to the people down there, they're like, if we had even $3,000, like, we're so lucky to get that kind of funding.
Amazing. Nash, how do you feel about that?
It's been such a great experience working with Story Hive. I've been through a few rounds of Story Hive now, projects now, like with music videos, web series, now a short film, and they just care so much about the filmmakers. Like, you know, they're on one end, they're the funders of like the film projects, and that's already such a great privilege to be able to, you know, have that kind of resource in the city. But on the other end, they just care so much about you as an individual, as a filmmaker, as a creator. So they don't just, you know, make sure you get the film done. They actually try to project your career and launch you forward into the next logical step. And whether it be, you know, to send you to film festivals, to send you to media festivals, to apply you for awards, and they're just so supportive.
Like Inconceivable and Akashi in another film, Welcome to Surrey, we're all on Air Canada right now, which is really cool. We got in really because TELUS has that I think agreement with Air Canada, and then it's airing and we're reaching to so many different kinds of audience, and it's not possible for normal short films to you know, do that.
Of course. That's this sounds like a great platform to have joined, and I'm very grateful that, you know, there is something like this in Vancouver. But I'm very grateful that the community is so active. I mean, how many applications does Story Hive receive? It's huge, right? Because there's so many people who have stories to tell, and I think that's the most beautiful thing, you know. If you're in a place that is hungry, then you probably are in the right place if everybody's hungry to do the same thing you're doing.
And I agree.
That's where synergy comes in, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have in mind a moment in your life where synergy really came in?
What does synergy mean?
Oh, synergy. Ooh, synergy is really special. Basically, it's when 1 + 1 = 3.
I think that's like every time I'm
every time
really.
On set. You
At
just,
least that's what we strive for.
Yeah. It's just elevating. Everybody's pulling each other up, and that's a really great set. Not all sets are like that, and I've experienced sets where it wasn't like that, and then you feel like either you're the only one kind of like hustling for this, or you just don't feel like people are in it. And we've been lucky for our projects that I think from my experience, every single project I've been on as one of the key creatives, it's always been such a great atmosphere of like, well, if that department's doing that great, well, I'm going to do this much. I got to like, you know, step up the game, which is, it's really inspiring to be around.
Yeah, that sounds like an evolved peer pressure right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Yeah. Look at that. All right.
Pressure.
Healthy pressure. Yeah, for sure. That's good. Well, this being said, you know, there's a huge amount of directions we can go right now, but there is something that has been flowing through my mind a lot. And it's the duality and the contrast of diversity and integration, especially in Vancouver, because it's a country, you know, Canada is a country that has its own history, and Vancouver is a city that has its own melting pot. And I'm wondering, how do you guys see Vancouver in 5 or 10 years in the realm of filmmaking?
I hope that there are more Vancouver-based big budget productions happening that is from CBC or like Vancouver local companies, or, you know, Netflix-funded Canadian production TV series or a movie. So it's not too much of a catering city, because we do such a great job offering all these services to the U.S. shows. But I think we have, not I think, I'm positive we have enough talent that there are so many great productions could happen here that is from Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So I hope that in 5 years we have multiple productions of that everybody is like working on and wanting to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mayumi, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I see myself, I hope that I would be directing and writing and acting on an even level.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
So it's a balance. You want to write and direct. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And,
definitely. A lot of people ask me like whether like, oh, are you going to choose one path? And I was like, well, everything kind of feeds each other.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Natch, how about you? Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Definitely directing, writing. I mean, I've been producing for quite a few years now, and I love producing for sure. But I'm also just starting to find my voice from, you know, a writing, a directing standpoint. And I think that's what I'll be working on in the next few years, is kind of just like solidifying that voice and I guess like, you know, putting together a project that really reflects me as a person, rather than just as a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about feature films?
I think it's on both our minds for sure.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I know Mayumi's already working on a feature right now, which is, you know, an extension of her short Akashi.
Mm.
And that's really exciting. I mean, I'm still at that point where I'm trying out a bunch of ideas. None of them's really sticking, but again, it's, you know, it's a process.
Mm-hmm. It's an exploration right there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. You know what? We're actually going to go and take a little break before we go into the 1 minute pitch and the Proust questionnaire. And of course, this is, again, the soundtrack of Philip Glass. This is coming from a different movie. This is from Mishima, A Life in 4 Chapters. Everybody enjoy the texture of this beauty. Catch you after the break. Thank you. Oh, wow.
Oh, beautiful.
It's incredible. I got to ask you guys, where did this song take you?
Gives me the impression of like flying, like the experience of flying. It's so delicate. It's you know, there's a lot of care, a lot of fragility, but a lot of care. I don't know. It's just always so impressed by Philip Glass. How about you? Where did it take you?
Mm-hmm. It took me to a place of complete peace, but at the same time, there's a little bit of conflict in there. You know, there is a little bit of a race, and that's back in the mountains in Latouil, up there, just going on my first trips on my own, reaching the destinations to sleep up there, take my pictures, be completely free, enjoy the warmth of the fire, the cold of the night, and the light of the stars. You know, like those moments that really stick by. I sometimes I feel like the most important experiences are the ones that you have on your own, you know. And I think that that's very interesting to me. Life is a long journey, you know. Points of view shift very quickly, but I feel that that's an interesting thing to explore. But that being said, let's go to the 1 minute pitch. Are you guys ready?
1 minute.
All right, let's go for it. I'm gonna hit that clock. Are you guys ready to make it happen?
Let's do it.
All right, and 3, 2, 1.
So, as we said before, we're the co-creators or co-producers of MAM 13, the Mighty Asian Movie Making Marathon this year. And on September 9th, Sunday, September 9th at 6:45 p.m. at the Rio, we're putting together a gala and awards show to showcase all the films. So if you want more information, check out MAM 13. That's mamm13.eventbrite.ca to get your tickets.
And we also have a Story Hive pre-screening. It's all free, totally free at the Rio Theater on September 2nd, 6:30 to 8:30. Doors at 6, so make sure you come at 6 p.m. It's totally free, so you should totally come. And we have 11 films, and there's going to be an after party as well. Oh, it's going to be dope, guys. Are we done? Oh, my gosh.
You still have 10 seconds if you want.
There
you go. That laugh is part of those 10 seconds. That's it. We're good to go. Amazing. I love it. All right. And that means that we're going to moonwalk towards the Proust questionnaire. Ooh. Are you ready to explore this?
Oh, you know what I should have said? Oh, man. I'm so sorry.
1 minute's over.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Really quickly, all the Story High films come online, totally available for everybody on September 6th at 12 p.m.
Ooh, yes. Thank you for that.
So if you can't watch it at the Rio Theater, it's going to be online.
But go to the theater. That's pretty much the message, right? Okay, awesome. All right. Awesome. Okay, well, this takes us to the Proust questionnaire, and Proust wrote down 35 questions, believing that answering those would help define someone's true identity. And we're going to go through five and get to explore a little better what it means to be human. Why not? And with that being said, I actually want to ask you guys, what is your greatest extravagance?
Oh, my gosh. You go first.
Oh, that's a loaded question.
I actually asked him yesterday, like, what is extravagance?
And I think it's the privilege of time, like that I am able to dedicate time and do the things that I love to do, because I know that not a lot of people get this opportunity to, you know, create freely and to be able to pretty much like live their dream. And I'm so grateful to be able to do that.
That's so true. That's the best answer. I'm going to say ditto.
That's a good one right there. Huh? Sometimes we can't take for granted, you know, the fact that we are living in Vancouver and then there is so much opportunity around us. And, you know, I think hunger is a huge aspect of what really makes also a storyteller. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have the hunger to tell that story, you know, nothing is going to happen. And I think that that's something to celebrate. The community of Vancouver is a hungry community. And I'm happy to be part of that, you know. It's good. It's great. And the second question of the Proust questionnaire is, what do you most value in your friends?
I value loyalty. I'm very loyal to my very close friends. And I think if you have that relationship, no matter how, you know, you haven't seen them in 5 years or 6 years, it doesn't change. You're still like the same person, same talk. And there's that sense of huge trust between the two of you. So I think loyalty.
Yeah, I think for me, trust is probably the biggest thing. Like, the, you know, being able to confide in them, being able to talk freely, you know, without any borders, and just be able to, you know, really, I guess, be myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Integrity. It goes down to integrity as well. Very beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I feel like there are so many reasons to not trust people out there right now. It's such a huge flow of information, you know, and people get lost very easily. And it's kind of hard to spot that core of gravity, you know, sometimes. But we need those little shaking, those little shakeups that remove the unnecessary, right?
Mm.
So there is always a reason why things happen. It's a balance, a constant balance. You know, it always flows. And with that, we flow to the third question of the Proust questionnaire, which is, who are your heroes in real life?
Definitely my father, who was a journalist, and he's now a professor at a university, and He's always been working and always is working, but also has a sense of play, and he kind of like, he's really good at taking time off and not think. So I really respect that about him. He has a really good off and on switch.
Yeah, and I guess for me it would be my mother, and you know, you probably get this answer a lot, but followed by my father as well. And now that I'm, you know, at my age, I think I can see the sacrifices they've made. I mean, we moved here, you know, almost 17, 18 years ago now, and I'm able to realize and understand like how big of a change it was for them, and nonetheless they were able to, you know, give me like 100% support in what I want to do, and to be able to go out and do what I want to do. So yeah.
Wow. And how was for you to come here to Canada?
I mean, I was still pretty young at the time, so for me it was like, it was very exciting, I guess. It was like, you know, learning the new language. I came here when I was about, I think I was like 7 at the time, and it was definitely new environment. You know, I came from Thailand, so coming here mid-January when there's like a lot of snow, it's cold, it's like, you know, it was a huge shift, but very exciting.
Wow. And how about you, Mayumi?
I moved here 8 years ago for film school, and I came here by myself, so it was a totally different experience, and I was an adult, but I think I was lucky that I was able to speak English fluently when I moved here, and I had a purpose. Like, I was going to film school, and I knew what I wanted to do, so I think that helped. I didn't float around so much. Yeah, I love it here. It's now, I think I can, it's the first place in my life that I've ever been able to call home, because I've always been moving around my entire life.
Wow, home is another interesting thematic right there. Mm-hmm. What is home to you? This is just a little extra question right there.
Home to me is, I think it lives with the person. It's not really a location, but like someone that I can feel true to myself. Someone that I can feel relaxed or be truly me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's home to me.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Nash. I feel you're agreeing with
definitely.
That.
Definitely. For me, it's always been about the people. It's not really about like the actual place. Like, as long as I'm surrounded by, you know, family and friends that I love, then that's, to me, that's home.
Mm-hmm. That resonates so deeply. Mm-hmm. It's we forge our home within. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. And that takes us to the fourth question of the Proust questionnaire, and that is a little bit funky, a little bit funny. If you were to die and come back as a person or a thing, what would it be? Yeah.
I've always had a strong connection to like lions and tigers.
Okay.
I'm like born in tiger year, and I'm a Leo. So for some reason I always kind of like, whenever I actually see them, I feel like, I don't know, I have this connection to them. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I was maybe part of that species before, and I would love to be back in that again, because I think I feel most natural there.
I think we had this conversation between ourselves once, and I think I came to a very similar answer. Tiger or lion of sorts, where I guess it, you...
But your reason was more logistical.
I associated with freedom and being at the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
there you go.
If I had to like pick an animal,
Classic producer answer right there.
So
I like that.
Funny.
Look at that, awesome right there. Woo. Okay. And that takes us to the fifth question of the Proust questionnaire, and with that, I actually want to ask you, what is your idea of perfect happiness?
Oh my goodness. I think I'm someone who has a lot of problem with insecurity, and I deal with, you know, kind of, I always have another person in my head kind of talking bad about myself. So to find peace in my mind, I think that's the most happiest place. And I hope that we can all, and when I'm concentrated on creating, that's when I feel like that demon kind of goes away. So that's probably why I love creating and being part of the arts and keep myself, I shouldn't say occupied, but I like to be busy in there because those demons go away. So I guess the moment when that's not those demons aren't there, that's my very happy moment.
Beautiful to link happiness with the arts. Nice. Natch?
And of course, I think my answer is very similar to that. Again, like going back to people, like so much of myself is reflected in the people around me. And, you know, filmmaking, like I love the collaborative process and to be able to do that. Like it would be a privilege. Like I call it a privilege because it is, like, we're in the business of making dreams, really, and to do that as my job, like, that's,
you're,
you
know, so,
that's
lucky.
Amazing.
Beautiful. Woohoo! And that wraps up the whole burrito here. We finished up the whole thing. Yeah. And we're approaching the end, but we're not quite done because I actually want to ask you one more thing. And with this, I want to wrap the whole episode. In case there are any shout-outs, I believe this is the time. Any shout-outs to other people out there?
Oh, my God, so many. But I don't know how I feel like I'm going to miss so many people, too. I have to give a huge shout-out to Phil Planta, who's been with me since the beginning of my film maker career and has been pretty much on every single project that I'm on. He's always supported me, and I call him my film husband. He calls me his film wife, and he's a huge part of my quote-unquote successes. And Shelby Shukalak also is also someone who's been around with me for a while, so yeah.
Awesome. Natch?
I think because we've talked about MAM, I'd really have to give a shout out to Lin Lee, Regina Lee, Vincent Wong, who have worked with us tirelessly to put together the event this year, and, you know, making sure that we're able to run it with creative freedom as the co-creative producers this year. And they've just been working so hard, and we can't thank them enough.
Awesome. And what's your advice to filmmakers out there?
Don't wait for the perfect moment. It's never a perfect moment. People wait for that. Well, it's not right yet. Or like, well, I'm not sure if this is, you know, it's never like that. So just, if you have that instinct, do it now.
Yeah. Write your own story.
The wheel needs someone to spin it, right? Awesome. All right. And here we are at the end of Room Tone Radio Show. This is Take 28. It was a pleasure to have you around here, guys. Again, Mayumi Yoshida and Natch Dutzdimeda. With that being said, I wish everybody a beautiful week. We're going to say goodbye with the soundtrack of one of my favorite movies overall. And this is, of course, the soundtrack composed by Philip Glass. The one you're hearing in the background here, this is Koyaanisqatsi. So everybody, enjoy, and I'll catch you next week.
Oh, yeah. Allow me to tell you about Unceded Airways.
What's that?
Isn't that some kind of indigenous radio show?
It sure is. Tell me, are you down for decolonization? Yeah. What?
I certainly wish I could hear about indigenous issues, people, and events on the radio.
You're in luck, because Unceded Airwaves talks about all these things and more every Monday morning at 11.
Music from indigenous artists and coverage of all the hot happenings in indigenous art and entertainment.
CITR 101.9 FM.
Oh, wow. And they broadcast all this from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people?
Find out for yourself. Monday mornings at 11. Yeah. Or find episodes online at CITR.ca.
Today we're joined in the studio by the Cedar Program Youth.
Where you are at.